Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today we have a very special guest. Doug Duncan is the Senior Vice President and Chief Economist for Fannie Mae. He's responsible for managing Fannie Mae's Economics and Strategic Research Group. In this leadership role, Duncan provides all economic housing and mortgage market forecast and analysis and serves as the company's thought leader internally and with external constituent groups. Woo! That's a lot to say.
That's the marketing department.
And you were recently named one of 50 most powerful people in real estate, and you've been a friend to investors. You invite us back to talk with Fannie last year, I believe, and also to FHA to talk about maybe loosening up some of the loans that were given to investors. So we really appreciate you and taking time to be with us today.
It's my pleasure. Investors are a critical part of the market.
Well, you know, it's interesting. We don't usually feel that way when we look at how much financing is available, but I don't know if we had to say what the definition of an investor was, we'd probably have to extend it to the blanket over to hedge funds. And that's a new one.
Yeah, that's right. That the public perception of that word has probably changed from the 2005 or 6 time period prior to the crisis to today's market, and not only the perception but also the reality. And hedge funds and REITs and groups like that who might not have been talked about before, certainly in the conversation today.
You know, when we were in the middle of this heaviest downturn, part of 2008 through 2010, there was always this rumor of bulk tapes and all of this, and a lot of people spent a lot of time. What's the reality of that today? Are there people buying things in bulk? Are they the hedge funds, and are they in partnership with Fannie on anything that goes out for years in advance?
Well, with regard to Fannie, we've done a pilot under the guidance of the FHFA of some bulk sales that was done, I think, about a year ago. And are kind of monitoring the performance of that. And there's no question that in some markets, there has been significant bulk purchase activity by investors. And some of the REITs that you see are institutions that were issued into the market by some of those hedge fund investors after they made the acquisition, and they spun the companies out as REITs. So we actually, one of the reasons we've been monitoring that to the extent the data are available is because in some markets the pace of price appreciation has been substantively impacted by that activity. So you take markets like Phoenix, for example, where there have been significant bulk purchases. If the demand curve in that market, to use a little economic jargon, is constant, and you take a chunk out of supply. Supply is slow to react, and if you take that chunk out of supply, then prices got to go up, all other things considered. And so you've seen in some of the markets where there's been significant investor activity, rapid price appreciation. Our view is with the rise in rates that's happened and some of the other dynamics in the market, that activity is and is likely to continue slowing, particularly in the hedge fund space.
I could see the hedge funds, especially when prices get up to a certain price where your cap rate is affected. Is that what they're looking at, basically, is can we buy for a certain type of cap rate, and then once that's over, then we're going to go find something else to do?
Yeah, that's right. They have very high rate of return targets, and they are opportunistic investors. That's sort of their place in the market, and so I think they will look for other opportunities. One of the concerns is that depending on their time horizon, in some markets, some folks are concerned about whether if they all make a decision to exit at the same time without have a downward pressure on price. We actually don't have that specific concern, but we do believe that over time, some of those products will come back onto the market and will keep the pace of price appreciation from running as rapidly as it has recently.
Well, in essence, you're saying, are these guys market makers? And you're kind of alluded that they kind of were a market maker when they were purchasing in markets where they took significant inventory down to low levels, that they were semi-responsible for price increases. I'm curious, are they market makers as far as rental value?
You know, I don't think they're in it for the long term. The hedge funds in particular are in it for the long term. But they have a combination of capital gain and current cash income that they're interested in. When they get to that target, they're likely to exit. Part of the timing of that will depend on what the other opportunities are as the Fed goes about attempting to move us to a more normal macroeconomic capital markets environment, which that's going to take a while, and you can see just what the early discussions of it generated in terms of excitement and interest rates. But as that changes over time, then I think it will depend on what the other opportunities are that emerge for them, whether they stay in this for longer rather than shorter time periods. But I would say they're probably no longer than midterm investors.
Okay. In 2011, in July, you authored a paper called Unusually Uncertain. And I wanted to talk a little bit about that, because how would you say things are different in 2013 as they were in summer of 2011?
Two or three important ways. One is there was still a significant question about whether or not we were going to lapse back into recession. The economic growth was very weak in that year. In fact, it was a lot of economists would say if growth is less than 2%, there's a high probability of one shock putting you back into recession. And we grew at less than 2%, something like 1.5% that year. This year, we're better. We're just going to be above that 2% rate, maybe 2.1%, so we're better, but still not robust by any means. The second thing is that there was significant additional monetary easing that took place subsequent to that time period, and that did put some stronger legs under the stock market, so there are some households that are impacted by that, and their wealth are feeling wealthier, so there's been some improvement there. Housing is probably the key turn, though, and it appears to have turned sustainably into an uptrend and is providing some wind at the back of the economy. And so we're seeing in our monthly surveys of consumers that their view of their housing situation is improving. One of the things that we track is it a good time to sell? No, I don't think anybody else asks that question. The reason we ask that question is because about 5 out of 8 people that are going to buy a house have to sell one first. So if it's a bad time to sell, in their mind, they're not going to be on the buy side subsequently. That's been moving up steadily now for about 18 months from the prior two-year time period where it was flat at 10%. Now it's up around 40% of households thinking that it's a good time to sell. So we've seen significant progress.
What the flip side of that is they're willing to repurchase one literally right after they sell. So it's what are they ultimately saying? Is that we're comfortable with our decision to buy in the past and we're going to rebuy another one? Or I guess the bottom line is, are they going to rebuy something? Is there a feeling now that housing is going to treat them well again?
Yes. The expectations of price improvement have strengthened significantly in parallel to that. We view that good time to sell as a leading indicator of whether people think they're coming out from being underwater.
Right.
Because there's still a significant amount of people that owe more than the house is worth. So that's actually the reason we've been tracking it. And so we've also asked them about their price expectations. And for the first time in the 3 years of the survey, last month, a majority of people expected prices to rise. That was the first time in the life of this survey that the majority of people were expecting house prices to increase over the next 12 months. The degree to which they expected them to increase, in other words, the percentage increase for the next 12 months rose to its highest level as well, and they were looking for about a 4% increase. This survey, as well as others, have made evidence there's a little bit of a lag in the consumer understanding of how prices are actually changing versus what you're seeing in the market. So,
how do expectations change actions?
Well, people will start to investigate the market if they expect that prices are going to strengthen, and they are at a pivot point where they might either want to move up or they might want to move to a different location. Then they start to look into the options. And there has been, for example, in the builder, there's been a pickup in traffic. It's also a question of whether people will start to inquire about credit. So there's been some pickup in their attitudes about the availability of credit. So they're kind of looking into that.
In general, is this price recovery at the speed that it's very aggressive in California? We have California Association of Realtors just came out and said that we literally have set a record for year-over-year price increase, and at least in median price, which is inaccurate, but at least it's been consistently inaccurate for a long time.
Right, exactly.
So we've had a very, very good year as far as price appreciation. But what's odd about that is why did it happen would be a good question to ask, because it normally is driven by job improvement or migration improvement. We don't have any of those things.
Right. And it's one of the reasons that we're telling people we're cautious about the robustness of the overall housing recovery. We don't view it yet as robust. Our view is that the price increases have been almost exclusively driven by supply side factors. So there's that question of bulk investor purchases. There's been some improvement in the degree of underwaterness. In other words, the price increase that's happened has brought some people out from underwater. There's been some improvement in the seriously distressed loan portfolios. So in other words, the share of loans which are 90 days or more past due has been falling, and the short-term delinquencies have also been falling. New home construction is still way below long-term normal levels, so you're not getting much boost on the supply from new construction. So even modest improvement in demand faces that restriction on supply, which is yet to ease. So as I say, our view is that it's mostly been driven by supply side factors at this point.
Well, when you try to look where the supply is going to come from, it's going to come from REOs or short sellers or equity sellers or investor flips.
Mm-hmm.
But what's interesting is what you said, the hedge funds probably are going to retain a lot of the properties at least for a while. And you have in California, you still have a fair amount of people upside down. So once you go from 6 months of inventory to below, let's say, 2 months, how do you go back? Going back to 6 months requires a tripling of inventory. Where would that possibly come from?
Well, part of it will come from people who are underwater. If the house price acceleration continues, then some of those underwater folks will come out from under.
But
some of it will have to come from builders. I'm sorry.
I wanted to ask you about that. If somebody's underwater, and let's say they do have positive equity, and I'm really asking from a stance, I'd like to understand if if that person has been willing to be underwater and make a payment for 5 years, they want to be a homeowner. I don't see the likelihood of them selling to become a renter once they're on the positive equity. So I'm wondering if they just won't stay there, or they'll sell and get another one, getting a, you know, a low down payment FHA loan.
Well, that's certainly a possibility. I would say it sort of depends on where they are in the life cycle, and or whether their motive in selling is relocation, significant geographic relocation, by which I mean not to the next neighborhood, but
exactly
to move out of state or something like that. And if they're, particularly if they're boomers, which a lot of the folks that own those homes are going to be boomers just because that's kind of the way it works in the life cycle, then whether they have a retirement motive or a relocation motive related to that, I think would also be a significant factor. But to your point, if you are making your payments today, you want to own a house. If it's just a matter of selling that one and then moving 3 miles away and buying another one, you still have the same supply problem in most instances.
Exactly. You haven't gained inventory. You've just had it lag by a month. They put one on, and then you bought another one. So I just don't see how you gain supply. That's the hard part, unless there's
The construction business is the other place, but, of course, that requires all the builders who let all that land go during the depth of the boom, reacquiring developable land and then getting all the permitting process done. And I know in California they're in some jurisdictions, that's a pretty arduous and time-consuming process.
And one of the things they haven't been doing is they haven't been creating any subdivision. So just to give you the numbers, because I'm real familiar with it, in Riverside, California, for most decent years, you'll have 300 subdivisions created. And for the last 5 years running, we've had 20 subdivisions created a year. And in 2013, the first quarter numbers just came out, and I thought, okay, well, they'll probably be significantly improved because of the market change, and there were 4 subdivisions created in Riverside.
Mm.
So in the first quarter. So nothing has changed as far as, to me, the builder still is looking at risk perception as saying, okay, I'm not sure I want to put the money out to create a building lot.
Right, right.
So I don't see, again, the inventory levels, I don't see how they could be hugely impacted by builders on only existing building lots.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about where it would have to come from.
Well, that certainly puts an advantage to the investors who are holding the rental properties.
Yeah, in fact, it does. And that's what you try to calculate when you're an investor on my side going, okay, well, where's our competition going to come from? And yeah, it doesn't look like the builders are going to be there in the front part anyway.
Right.
What percentage of people own a home now in the country, and is it still declining, or is it stabilized?
It's about 65%, I think the last couple of reports have been within a decimal point of that number. So it seems to have stabilized. It depends. Some people will say, well, if you're underwater, do you really own the home? So if you look at the share of people that are underwater and assume, you know, want to make that assumption that they're not owners, then it's somewhere between 60 and 62%. But in terms of people that are in their house, they're making the mortgage payment, or own the house outright, it's about 65%. Our view is that that's reasonable. It might drop a little more to 64, that's a possible. We don't really forecast that number, but if you just look at the sort of a common sense approach to demographics and look at those folks that are, say, the 75 and above category, and those that are under 30, you knock off about 35% of the population in those groups. Even though some of the 75 and older folks are still staying in their homes, but just that sort of common sense approach that demographics would tell you 65% is probably about normal.
Well, and, you know, we got up to a little over 69%, and I guess we certainly wanted everyone to own a home in that during that era. Do you think policies will settle into where we probably don't make a run at 70% ownership anymore?
Yeah, I remember in the mid-2000s getting a bunch of phone calls from the press. There were some famous personages that made statements about shooting to 72 or 75%. And I gave the press folks the same comments that I just gave you about looking at just the basics of demographics. And I said, I just don't see how that can work. Because not everyone who is eligible actually wants to own a home. There are a lot of people who prefer renting. And that's not just low-income or medium-income folks. There are high-income households that simply prefer not to own the real estate. So to me, it's hard to see how you get there. And I think it is now broadly acknowledged that there were some public policy assumptions or policy programs that were put in place that simply were not effective, or they actually had a deleterious effect. So I think policy has made some adjustments to say that we'd like to see credit available to those who are willing and able to own a home to be able to do so, but not everyone is either qualified or interested or ready at some stage in their life in order to be an owner. So I think you'll see some backing off on that.
What's the sentiment of the typical family who lost a home 3 years ago, through foreclosure? Do you have any statistics saying that they're very, very much wanting to re-own, or the experience has sort of put them off?
You know, that's a great question. We do not ask that in our survey, but every quarter we cycle in a new kind of question. Let me put that on the list of to see if we can subsample that or oversample that and see if we can find out. That's a great question. I know a number of years ago HUD had started some research into people that lost homes in foreclosure and whether they ever became owners again, and I never saw the final results of that that survey. In our survey, we ask people, do they desire to own a home? And the desire to own a home is undiminished over time throughout the cycle. Just people still value home ownership. What we don't have, I think, is a subsample that tells us whether the respondents are people that actually have lost a house through foreclosure or not. Well, and interestingly, the most optimistic age group about the investment value of a home is the youngest cohort.
Who didn't participate in any of this.
Exactly. Now they've seen the house prices come back, and they're saying, you know, this is not a bad thing. Now, whether they decide to make the move today or not is a separate question, but they certainly have seen the reset in housing, and it will work to their advantage.
What's interesting is, along with statistics and charts, you have to study human nature to figure out what's next, because mm-hmm. we're pretty repetitive in what we'll do. You know, if you think, okay, well, everyone's going to write off housing because it had a bad stretch, I probably go, nah, I don't think so.
Yeah, no, we don't see that in the survey. What we do see adjust is people are very clear that they have to improve their credit performance going forward, not just to acquire the home, although they talk about, we ask them about that, and they recognize that conditions for acquiring mortgage credit will be more difficult going forward than it was prior to the bust. But they also recognize the burden of maintaining the home, and they want to be financially prepared for that as well. So there's been some healthy shifts, I think, in the credit space that would indicate hopefully more stability in housing going forward.
We're down to our last 30 seconds. Doug, I just wanted to thank you again for taking time. I know your schedule is very busy. And you can go to the website of Fannie Mae and check out not only the articles that Doug has written, but news releases and all the policy changes that go on. It's been a very interesting 5 years, and we'll pick up this conversation with Doug in our next segment. Doug, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.